ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, a getaway edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So, the Killer G's were a minute 22 late today. Not a record.
Under from yesterday.
They're a minute 30 yesterday. So, yesterday's still the record since we've tracked. I'm sure they've had over a minute and a half, but we just started tracking yesterday. It's kind of like Will Chamberlain. We don't know how many blocks he had.
Yep.
He probably did have the record, but we don't know. Same thing with the Killer G's. So, it'll be fun to monitor next week. I'm sure they'll break it soon. Good news, bad news from Christian Javier yesterday. I posted this tweet yesterday, Blankers. Good news, bad news for the Astros' Christian Javier, who went like three innings, had six strikeouts, gave up a couple of home runs. All I posted, good news, bad news for the Astros and Christian Javier. Dot, dot, dot. Good, velo is up, swing and miss is there. Bad, when there's contact, Javi isn't missing barrels. Is that been negative? Is that mean? Am I being too harsh there?
You're being literal, Jeremy.
I can't do it with these Astro fanboys, Blankers. And, like, I've been called an Astro fanboy. So, like, I think I'm one of them. Maybe they're turning on me. I don't know. But I can't. The season has to get here. Because it's like spring training. If you bring up something that's like, okay, I just have my eye on it. Because, like we always scale things 1 to 10. Like, how much are you reacting to this? It was a 2. Like, read it. But bad. When there's contact, Javi isn't missing barrels. That's truth. Like, he gave up a couple of homers. Was one a good pitch? Sure, I guess. But he still didn't miss the barrel. Like, it's a factual statement. And I had dudes coming at me. I had fanboys coming at me. I had the Astro Twitter czar coming at me for posting this very literal response. Again, I was at a 2, and obviously the good news is far more important than the bad. Yeah, I care way more about his velo being up and his swing and miss being there than giving up a couple of homers because he found a couple of barrels. Whatever, not that big a deal. But it did happen. It is the truth. I'm tired of living in this, like, fairy tale land, where anything that happens in spring training that's a negative, we're just supposed to ignore it. It didn't happen. Only look at the positive. Opening day needs to get here quickly because I can't do it anymore with this stuff.
This is kind of when you checked out to do the Cougs yesterday. Brian and I had this conversation because you read my mind. I went off on how sick I am of the overreactions that people have just based on where we are in spring training. Oh, God, the rotation's screwed. JV's out. Who knows how long? Oh, God, Javier gave up 2 bombs. Oh, no, what's next? I mean, the sky is falling. This is awful. The same thing with going through the offensive lineup. Every day that they don't put a crooked number up and have, like, 10 double-digit hits, it's the offense is screwed. They're terrible. No one can hit. What are we doing? Where's the power? And you look at it and go, relax, people. We haven't played one game for real yet. And yet we're losing our bleeping minds on a daily basis based on what guys do in spring training. And if you've ever been down there or around a team and realized that they're more focused on their golf game right now than they are on where they are on the field. And Brian and I talked about this. The biggest thing, the only positions you really worried about are the guys on the fringe trying to make the team, which, as we talked about, the middle relievers, guys trying to earn that spot as one of the bench guys. Other than that, like, pitchers are working on pitches. If they get hit, so what? They're trying to see if a pitch that they're trying to work into the repertoire is worth working on or if it's scrapping for right now. It's just, it's mind-boggling how overly over-the-top people are with this team in spring training.
But also how sensitive they get. Like, he found a couple of barrels. It's the truth. It doesn't mean that I think Christian Javier is going to have a 5 ERA. It doesn't mean that I think Christian Javier is going to have the worst season of his career. It's just, hey, he found a couple of barrels for home runs. That's it. That was the tone. And people are like, Schwab called me panicky. He called me panicky.
He, of all people, going over the top is a bit much.
I know. I love Swabby. But Swabby can sometimes be a little bit, you know, he can be a little panicky. Hashtag pay the man. Remember whenever he was like that with Carlos Correa? Love Swabby. That tweet wasn't panicky. No. He found a couple of barrels. He got hit hard a couple of times. Man, I'm over spring training. I am over spring training. I am ready for opening day where we can have real assessments and giving up home runs actually matter. Because when you give up a home run in spring training, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I mean, I remember this when people were like, even back to the Springer days, when people were like, what's George doing in spring training? How is he hitting this bat? And he's out in front of the training complex in a lake, a mini lake outside of that big logo they have out there, racing like little speedboats. Like, he doesn't, at this point, people, he doesn't care even close to the amount of time you care about what he's doing now. When it matters, he'll care. He'll be just fine.
713-780-ESPN. Twitter, Astro fanboys, what annoys you with them, especially during spring training? 713-780-3776. Also, what is worse, do you think, Blankers? Is it worse, like, spring training hot takes, or NFL preseason hot takes? Which of the two is, because you get like, okay, remember the Charles James socks, like Hard Knocks? Yep. It's like, oh no, they're cutting this guy who makes cool socks. He's out of the league in a year and a half. Like, these guys turn into like these cult heroes. And it's like, we got to have this guy on the team. He's the future in the secondary. No, he's a journeyman, just a guy. He's probably going to be out of the NFL in 2 years.
Who was the last QB that lit it up in a preseason, like DTR with the Browns? And they were like, he's the next Deshaun. This guy's here. And then, you know, he starts one game, they win, but he throws for like 149 yards and then disappears. But in preseason, that was the dude.
Who was it? Flynn in Green Bay? Like, he ended up playing playing in the end of the regular season and like played well. But didn't it all get started based on having a really good preseason, and then he played like in real games in like the final 2 weeks and went off and then got that huge deal in Seattle?
He played pretty good in the preseason. They were 15-0, but decided they didn't care about finishing the season undefeated. He played against Detroit and threw for like 4 or 5 touchdowns, and people lost their mind. And then in the offseason, yeah, you're right, Seattle gave him this mega deal, and then they drafted Russ. Yeah. Russ beat him out from training camp on, and it was like they cut him after that, and you're going, and this was the guy that you were putting all your hopes on.
he was definitely a darling. You get them all the time. Like, who was the tight end, Brian? Was it Steven Anderson? I think it was Steven Anderson.
Anderson got some preseason hype for sure.
He had a huge preseason. It's like, oh, this guy's going to be the best tight end since Owen Daniels. And it's like, okay, man.
Best tight end since Owen Daniels.
It might be Dalton Schultz.
It might be.
It might be Dalton Schultz. Branham, weekdays worse. Astros Twitter overreaction or Alex Bregman contract talk? I think Alex Bregman contract talk is better, so I'll go Astro Twitter overreaction to spring training as worse. Because Bregman's is actually, like, tangible. Like, that's real. Like, if there was something done today, it's like, okay, well, that's going to be our lead story. So I have to go Astro's Twitter overreactions way worse than Alex Bregman contract talk. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to go with I prefer to, of the two, deal with the reality of the Alex Bregman contract situation more than I deal with the fallacies that are being created in Astros fans' minds about the world coming to an end with what's going on in spring training.
You know, you remember who the Cam Darling was last year? I remember this vividly. And we did some station. No, it wasn't, actually. Because whenever he made the roster over the other player, everybody, like, lost their mind. And we actually did a show from Sugarland. Remember they had the exhibition? And the Wheelhouse interviewed the certain outfielder by the name of Justin Dearden.
Justin Dearden,
who he went off in spring training. Everybody's like, oh, he needs to make the roster. He's so good. And then he had a terrible year in AAA. The Astros left him unprotected in the Rule 5 draft this past offseason, and no other major league team picked him. So let's be careful with these, like, oh, reactions, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, you're allowed to say
something. I thought you were going Bly Madrid on me.
No, I don't think he was. No, that shows you the state of the Astros bench last year. I don't think he was really a camp darling. He was just a warm body that could fill out a roster.
But he was playing well. I think one of the guys went nuts in AAA for a while, and then everybody's like, ooh.
He did. I mean, Bly did. But didn't they get Bly? Was Bly with them during spring training, or did they get him after? I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
He was with them during spring, because I think they traded for him late in the offseason before spring training. I think he was a Pirate. I think they got him.
I think
like
he definitely was a Pirate, yes.
I think they ended up getting him in January. 713-780-ESPN. Tony 22 here. In comparison, Texans Twitter is absolutely horrible as well regarding free agency talk, especially running backs. This is a I like free agency.
I do too, and I like the fact that you're talking about it from a relevant team standpoint. You're talking about it as it's exciting. It's one thing if you're a team that's just trying to do something that people will notice to like be on the radar. So you're trying to you end up probably overspending for a player that's probably past his prime, or you're grossly overpaying, as opposed to thinking about all the creative ways this team can get better and become more than just a playoff team. I think that's why it makes it so intriguing.
We haven't had a chance to talk about it from an excited, like, looking for position since, what, 2020? Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time. We've got a lot of time to make up for 2021, 2022, and even last year, because when free agency started, they hadn't drafted CJ yet. So, I mean, there was nothing to be excited for the last three free agency cycles, so.
Quite frankly, this is probably the most exciting offseason in Houston Texans franchise history, and I don't like say that lightly. I'm not being hyperbolic. Well, did you have this cap space?
Well, you mean you signed Jonathan Joseph and Daniel Manning? You got Wade Smith. You drafted J.J. Watt. There obviously a lot came out of that offseason.
Now that's great in hindsight. You didn't know Watt whenever you drafted him, though, and people booed the J.J. Watt selection. Like you're coming off C.J. Stroud's rookie year. You have $65 million in cap space. You have a playoff team. You think if you play your cards right, you could be a Super Bowl contender. I think this is the most entertaining Texans offseason they've ever had, in free agency specifically.
Okay,
the draft,
yeah, I was
going to
say,
so
draft-wise, when you came out of the draft with Deshaun Watson
free agency
and ended
specifically.
Up...
Let me rephrase. Let's go free agency. This is the most exciting free agency period in Texans football history.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Because 23rd pick, I mean, it's still cool, but it's not – you know, it's not last year where you had 2-12. It was much different last year because you were coming off a three-win year under Lovie Smith. You'd won 11 games in 3 years. Like, you're an actual playoff team now, you know?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think you're right. I think from the standpoint of just kind of everything falling into place and now the anticipation of what could be to take this team to the next level is what's got everybody dialed in to every mock draft and every free agent and every cap casualty to say, ooh, everybody that gets released, could he be a Texan? Would he be a good fit? Could we get him at the right price? Because you know what they need, and you know that there's a couple of different ways you can get them. But if they get those players, there's a chance they could be even better than they were last year.
0754, this is the old guy, get off my lawn show. Yeah, and you love it. 0754.
Still tuned in.
You love it. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Busy show for you today. It is a Friday, so we'll mean text you to wrap off our show a little bit later. Who are the top three Rockets in order? We've been doing this each month that you're building around, and we've actually extended it beyond three because there's enough young names to be in this conversation. Best and worst free agent signings in Texans history. The Dalton Schultz details of his contract are out. I really like what I see. But what's coming up next? What's more likely for the Astros this year? Scoring the most runs in the American League or giving up the fewest runs in the American League? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. On YouTube as well, just search ESPN Houston. Joel's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. 713-780-ESPN. I heard, Blankers, I listened to a little bit of the Killer G's since I was setting up and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, I did too.
They said they banned you from their show.
Why?
I don't know why. I don't know if they had a good reason. They just did it.
Well, I just had a horrible flashback because BMAC stepped out of the producer's room and Joe George was in the window. And I was like, oh, God, what did we do?
You know, I was chatting on with the Twitchers. You know, if you want to be interactive with the Bees, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN Houston on YouTube. And I was interacting with the Twitchers, who I'm dear fans of. You know, I know that they don't have jobs. I know times are tough. So I try to be really kind to them. I saw Joe in the little, you know, picture. Yep. If you're not familiar with our Twitch, they have pictures of us. They have the little camera for the producer, which is tiny, which is how it should be because they're not the talent. We're the talent. And I saw Joe in there. I was like, yeah, should I say hello to Joe? I was like, you know what? I really don't want to. I really don't want to. So I stayed quiet and minded my own business and didn't.
He big times a lot of people now that he's gotten this new role that he, you know, he's taking this step up. He's got a lot of attitude. He gets really flippant on the air.
Does he?
Yeah. And then I when I was listening to the Killer G's, Paulie actually dropped a couple of bombs on air today. And trial by air, he basically dropped them and then said, can I say that on the air? I wouldn't go through that process every time, but that's just me.
So did they dump them or not?
Oh, I don't think so. I think they made it out loud and clear.
So I guess we're still waiting and seeing.
Because I heard one of them really loud and clear.
What did he say?
How do I put this best? Another name for a cat.
Oh, you can say that.
With a P?
Yeah, I don't think you can say it with the Y at the end.
Oh, well, he did.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can say the other thing without the Y, but I'm not sure you can say it with the Y. I'm unsure. I don't know. I mean, not that I would, but whatever. What's more likely, scoring the most runs in the American League for the Astros or giving up the fewest? 713-780-3776. What do you think?
Ask me again.
What's more likely, scoring the most runs or giving up the fewest?
I think score the most runs. I really like this offensive lineup. I look at the lineup and I look at the pitching staff, and I love the back end of the bullpen, but because the rotation is still kind of up in the air and you're waiting for guys to come back and seeing how long other guys are going to be out, it's not that I don't believe that they're eventually going to be good and that they're going to be fine starting the season, but being fine and then being able to do the kind of things that you know, a comparison like that brings to the table, I'm like, probably not. But I do believe this offense is potent enough, and now when you move Yordan up, I expect Tucker to have another good season. I think Abreu hopefully has figured some things out. And then taking Baldy out, putting Yiner in, I just believe this offense has a chance to do kind of what Texas did a year ago. I think this offense has a chance to put up a ton of runs.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm kind of surprised to hear you say that, knowing your disdain for Myers, if I'm being honest.
You know me. If there's one way it's going to go south, it's because of that right there.
Yeah, but to your point, like Myers in the 9-hole, even if you don't like him, is an upgrade over Maldonado in the 9-hole. Astros had a good-ish offense last year. I think the biggest reason that their offense struggled last year, the biggest reason they didn't finish top two, top three in runs scored was because of injuries to their stars. I mean, Altuve missing 60 games, Yordan missing 40 games, it's gonna hurt your offense. Because I'm an Astro fanboy, I could go either way on this, quite frankly. I think the offense has a chance to be really good, and I think with the progressiveness of Joe Espada, I think he's going to maximize the runs for this offense. Not that it's a huge deal, but if you're going to lead the league in something, I think you need to maximize the lineup. You know, you're not going to see Jose Abreu hit in the cleanup spot and Kyle Tucker hit behind him for a huge chunk of the year like we saw a year ago. So I like the way Espada is doing things with the top four. Brian mentioned the other day, you know, we talked about the Yiner-Chaz thing, and I was a little surprised to see Yiner in front of Chaz, but then Chaz was in front of Yiner against lefties. So it's like, okay, you got a pretty progressive manager. If they stay healthy, I think they have a shot to lead the American League in runs, and I feel the same way about the pitching staff. Mm-hmm. I think with what you have, now a lot of things have to go right. I think more things have to go right with the pitching staff than the offense. You know, Fromber has to be the Fromber you can trust. Not calling his own pitches, by the way. Christian Javier, he's got to live up in the zone. He's got to throw harder than he did last year, which yesterday he did. Lots of positive signs yesterday. A little bit of bad news, but lots of positive signs yesterday.
Easy.
Hunter Brown
Careful.
Has to take the next step. So I think that there's more ifs with the pitching staff. I think they're both capable to lead the American League. But because there's more ifs with the pitching staff, I'm going to actually go with the offense here. Better chance for the Astros to lead the league in runs than giving up the fewest runs in the American League. 713-780-3776. Where do you stand on this, Brian?
Yeah, I unfortunately agree with you guys. I don't want to make it a boring unanimous decision, but I agree with you because, yeah, I mean, there's far more, you know, unknowns. There's far more, you know, what-if scenarios with the pitching staff to me than the offensive lineup. I mean Altuve, Tucker, Yordan, I mean, up and down the lineup, there are very few question marks where you have to play the game of, well, if he hits his upside, if he stays healthy, like, those question marks don't exist nearly for the offensive side to the level that they do for the pitching staff. I mean, up and down the lineup, there's pretty much a question mark with everybody. Javier, Fromber, Verlander's age, obviously Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia coming back. What's Arcidi's deal? Does Hunter Brown take a step forward? You can't go through the pitching staff other than the back three in the bullpen without listing a major question mark, and that just doesn't exist to the same level with the lineup. So I think they're far more likely to lead the league in scoring.
Same thing with the middle relief, too. Like, it's not that valuable in terms of, like, winning 95 games during a regular season. But if you're trying to compete to have the best ERA in the entire American League, the middle relief is pretty suspect for the Astros. A lot of textures bringing up this point here. If they can hit at home, will they struggle with the batter's eye at home this year? I was in Minute Maid Park a few times during the offseason. And there have been no changes to
really?
The batter's eye, for what it's worth. So
was that the big deal that they said that they identified the problem? They were fixing it. They were going to do more to make it.
Well, remember they added the paint late in the year.
Yeah.
And apparently that was the only step.
I thought they said after the season that they were going to, I don't know if it was going to research it first or what they were going to do, but I thought that they were even plans or something or discussions about the fact that they were going to do more extensive batter's eye expansion, if you will.
I don't remember that. And it didn't happen if it did. So that could be an issue because that was something that was a problem last year for whatever reason. Like, it didn't seem to affect other teams that came into Minute Maid Park, but it affected the Astros. But I did hear, I have on good authority that that was real. That actually was a real thing.
Uh-huh.
And the pitchers that you would have the most trouble picking up on were lefties, especially lefties that came over the top or were, like, tall enough. So it was, like, the release point for lefties. And the Astros really don't have last year. You know, they had Fromber, but Fromber's kind of short and doesn't really have an over-the-top release. Maybe it could benefit Josh Hader. Maybe Josh Hader's in line for a career year because he's a tall lefty.
He
kind of throws from the side a little bit, so I'm not sure. But yeah, that's where I heard they had the most trouble.
To me, if that's the case, I just need Josh Hader to dominate and pitch a lot then, because we need to try and balance this out. It's befuddling to me how they went the entire year and had that many struggles at home and the visiting team didn't. But if that's it, then identify it. But I literally thought that there were multiple articles and I guess tweets and other things, but people around the team with like McTaggart's and guys like that, Chandler Rome's talking about the fact that in the offseason they were going to focus in and change more or something, but that's shocking to me a little bit.
Yeah, I really legitimately just don't remember, but it's very, very much the same. Now, they did add the paint last year towards the end of the year. Maybe that's good enough, but you know, you start looking at all those corporate seating up there, you know? Like, there's the party suites. There's where the Pluckers is at, like – money, or you're going to hit 30 points lower at home. Like, you know, that's the real life decision probably for the Astros.
No, I mean, and then they've got and they've changed the name of it and they've done it a couple of different ways. But, you know, they've got that three-tiered restaurant right at dead center. And there's always a lot of movement. And I don't think they have umbrellas out there, but they've just got a lot of stuff going on at all times. The first three levels right behind the wall, too.
Yeah, that's where I heard that it's the hardest to pick up on. It's because it's the busyness there, and it's not all green. So you have, like, the busyness of random people wearing, like, random colored shirts, and it's busy. It's hard to get a good eye on the ball. But, look, I mean, the other team has to do it, too. Like, it's not just unique to the Astros. The visiting team has the same thing. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Willie from the east side on the line. What's going on, Willie?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking the call. I think the pitching will be better than the bench because most of the guys that's on the pitching staff, they're proven, and you saying that the offense is more progressive.
The manager,
more progressive than it was last year. Yan Diaz hit anywhere from 4-7 last year, depending on left or right, and with Alvarez hitting second, they won a World Series with him hitting third.
Sure, but that's more
Tucker
progressive.
More even if it's not
the right decision, it's still more progressive. You could be wrong in progressive, but it's still more progressive. You know, hitting Jordan in the two hole is a progressive, modern, sabermetrical.
Yeah, the traditional
decision.
Thing is he hits cleaner.
Yeah, or third. You know, third or fourth.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that it's wrong. It doesn't mean that it's right. It just means that it's more progressive.
Yeah. Okay.
Appreciate the call. Great hearing from you again, Willie.
Thanks for the call, Willie.
Willie loves his baseball, and we love it when Willie calls. Hopefully we hear a lot more from Willie with his baseball
season coming up. I mean, to Willie's point, though, a lot of that experience is hurt and on the pitching staff. And so, you know, when you look at what they could be, it's a whole lot different than that. How they're going to start the season and what they will be early on because of not knowing when Verlander threw today. So, and evidently he was able to air it out and throw 60 pitches. And so hopefully he's still on a timetable to be back sometime in the month of April. You know, JP France, McTaggart wrote a column today that, you know, he's adding a new pitch and he's ready to prove himself in the rotation. I don't know when, but I hope it's sooner rather than later. And then of course you're waiting on Garcia and McCullers, which are going to be more midseason ads.
Yeah. See, Willie's like, sure, they have the experience. Like, I'm not going to argue that point. That point's an accurate point. And I'm not really one that believes a whole lot in momentum carrying over from the previous end of the year to the new start of the year. But it does kind of linger in your mind, right? Because most of those pitchers last year, they ended the season on poor form. Fromber was in awful form in the second half of last year. Christian Javier was not in good form right after the All-Star break. He started to get better, like right at the end of the regular season, was pitched pretty well in the postseason until the final start, and he was atrocious and couldn't get out of the first inning in Game 7 of the ALCS. Hunter Brown was in negative form in the second half of last season. JP France pitched worse in his last four starts than he did in his previous four starts. So all of the starters that, yes, they have the resume, but they had terrible form at the end of last season, which creates doubt for the fans going into the new season this year.
Then you enter spring training, and every little thing becomes a big thing in a hurry, and you freak out.
Yeah, or the opposite.
Spencer Arrighetti, already a bust.
Just horrible. I mean, just a huge disappointment.
Well, I mean, you can't. No. That's not true. You don't have negatives in spring training. So he got rocked today, but it's like it didn't even happen because it's spring training and you ignore the negatives.
I forgot. Yeah,
exactly.
He's working on stuff.
Yeah.
So then Blanco's the buffoon that's been getting people out. Damn it.
Yeah, he's Cy Blanco to you, Blankers.
That's right. Okay, my bad.
1-2-6-4. Sorry for showing my ignorance here. It's okay. We do it all the time. But what exactly is the batter's eye, and what was the issue that made the hitting at home suffer? The batter's eye is required in every big league ballpark behind the center field wall. It's usually a big green fixture. It could be a wall. You know, you see the fountains in Kansas City. It's supposed to be one solid dark color, usually green, that gives the batter a good opportunity to pick up the baseball from when it releases the hand of the pitcher. It's called the batter's eye. And the batter's eye at Minute Maid Park is small. There is some obstructions, I guess, in the batter's eye with like Gallagher Plaza, those restaurants that are out there, and it's very busy. So it's not like one constant big batter's eye. You have some movement out there, and there's reports that that's why the Astros can't pick up the baseball as well at home than on the road.
Well done, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Rangers didn't seem to struggle with it in the ALCS, though.
Yeah, but the Astros don't have a big, tall lefty. 9062, how do y'all feel about Joey Votto to the Blue Jays? It moves the needle, not at all.
Don't care.
Do not care. I had a thought in my mind, do I wish the Astros would pick up Joey Votto? I asked myself that question.
I had it, too.
And I quickly answered myself, and I said no.
I mean, look, if this was more like prime Joey Votto, great. I know he was clamoring to get on a roster. He did Ben Verlander's podcast kind of, I think it was yesterday, basically saying, I'm ready. I really want a shot to prove that I can still play Major League Baseball. He's from Canada. It's a Cinderella story. And they signed him to a minor league deal. But, yeah, no, that's not going to move the needle.
No. I mean, is he an upgrade over John Singleton? Probably.
Sure.
But, I mean, whatever. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. Who are the top Rockets in order that you're building around? 713-780-3776. Killer E's, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Locked
locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-3776. Did you see what Ty Lue said about Jalen Green and Cam Whitmore?
I did not.
He said that they remind him of a Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady when they were together at Toronto before they really came into their own.
Huh. I know that Kelly Eco wrote a column about how they hit it off from the very first time they met and that they have a good chemistry, those two.
I read that too. I read his article this morning, and that's cool. That's mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. It don't look like it. Whenever
I was
playing,
like trying to figure out like where
it doesn't look like it.
Yeah. I was thinking like, so are we trying to say that they belong on the court at the same time? Because if you look at the plus minuses, yeah. it ain't all that. And if you look
it's not bad. It's good.
But it's good. But when it was like plus seven, I think.
That's better than negative seven.
Right. Well, of course. Yes. But it's seven, right? And then when I look at it and I think about, well, let's see. Well, we know Jalen's personality is basically type A scorer. And you know Cam can't touch a ball without thinking he's got to shoot it as soon as it hits his fingertips right
yes.
now. I don't know if that's a good combo platter right there.
Look, hopefully they can be, because I do want to see them more on the floor together, more as like an experiment, just because I want to see what it looks like. But there was that game 2 weeks ago, last week, can't remember, they all run together. I think it was at Phoenix when Jalen Green was just popping off and was going nuts, like he had one of his better games recently. I think it was the night he scored 35 or whatever, and he was hot. Like, it was when he was hot. Like, there's times when you score 35, maybe you're hot, like, you know, all in the second quarter, things like that. You still, like, finish with a good point production, but when you're really hot is at a certain period of the game. And he was hot. I think it was late second, middle of the second, somewhere around there. And Cam Whitmore, like, goes 1-on-3 when Jalen Green's wide open. And mm-hmm. Green's just like, give me the ball. You can. He didn't say it, but you can see his body language. Like, come on. You can see everybody else's body language. Like, why didn't you give him the ball? And then it was like a trip or two down the trip or two later, like two possessions later. Same thing, but opposite guys. We're like, Cam Whitmore is wide open in the corner, and Jalen Green tries to attack a 1-on-3. And Cam Whitmore is just like, you can see, like, Cam Whitmore's aggravated. Like, he didn't get the pass. So, cool that they have a +7. It's cool that they've bonded. I don't see that on the floor yet. I hope that they can eventually get there, because I think that they're both very talented offensive players, each in their own right. Which segues to the question here, Blankers. We've been doing this each and every month. Mm-hmm. Brian wasn't aware of it, so we had to let him know. Who are the top Rockets right now, currently, in March, that we are building around? You go back to last month, where we just took the average of what we all, you know, said. We had Alpi 1, Cam 2, Jalen 3, Jabari 4, Amen 5. What are you going with this month in March?
Well, I'm going Alpi 1, and he's been on a heater again, and he's been pretty consistent all season long. So I just feel like Alpi has earned the number one spot. And then from there, it's kind of a crapshoot because of all the, you know, for all the potential that we see in the other four guys, it's just like who has the lowest amount of shortcomings right now and who's kind of snapping out of it. I think Jalen has started to impress me in the fact that he's really kind of now doing other things. When his shot's not there, or his three-point shot's not there, he's finding other ways to not only score but also get his other teammates involved too. So I like that. So I think I'm going to probably go Alpi, and then I'm going to go Jalen. And then I'm gonna go on potential for possibly being more than just a rotational player. I'm gonna go Alpi, Jalen, Cam, Amen, and Jabari.
Alpi, Jalen, Cam, Amen, Jabari.
Yep.
Okay. Surprised you went Jalen too.
He's just lately. I think part of it is because I want him to succeed. Because I'm pulling for this kid because I just see those flourishes where when he gets up in the air and he hangs and he finishes around the basket and he goes reverse and uses the rim as a shield and can do some of the things in the open floor. I'm just like, this kid is too talented to not be playing better. So when he starts playing better, I keep crossing my fingers going, please let this be the time when he just kind of finally all the light clicks on for good and everybody's good.
Yeah, I'm going Jalen with my number two as well. The upside's just too high.
Yep.
Like he has more upside than anybody on this team besides Alpe, because I think Alpe's proven this year that with the steps that he, the strides he took from last year to this year, unbelievable. Like, we compared him, I hate comparing him to the Joker. Like, he's certainly not, I don't think he's going to be as good as Jokic ever. It's hard for me to think that Alpe's going to be an MVP in the NBA. But Alpe's ahead of where the Joker was when he was 21 years old, ahead of where he was, or similar to where he was whenever they were in the third year of the league. So I still got to go to Alpe. Alpe's offensive game's really good. You can give him the ball. He can be a focal point of the offense on a playoff caliber team, I think. But Jalen's upside's unbelievable, and he shows you that upside. Quite frankly, his upside is why he's so frustrating. If Jalen Green was, you know, a 12 point per game scorer and his career high was like 20, he didn't score 35 every now and then, he didn't average 20 points a game last year in his second year in the league, we would have already wrote him off and we'd just be like, whatever, this guy's no good. He's not somebody that has tons of potential. But his potential is why he's frustrating, because you know what he can do. He just doesn't do it consistently, and that's what leads to the frustration. But I have seen him become more of a winning basketball player with Ime the last 3 weeks or so. So I'm bullish on his offseason and his potential next year. I want to see what that looks like. Maybe not bullish on the player, just bullish on next season. Jalen Green, did he get really better in the offseason? So I'm still going to go Jalen Green 2. I'm going to bump Amen up to 3 for me, because I just, his skill set's very, very unique. Not a good shooter, obviously, but he does things at that position that not many people in the league can do. Defends well, rebounds really well, blocks shots, gets his hands on a lot of basketballs, blah, 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 blah. I think he can be a triple-double kind of guy, kind of a poor man's Ben Simmons, hopefully without the injuries. Jabari, really good role player. Like, I don't think Jabari's upside's an all-star, but I think Jabari can be a unique role player on a really good team where he can give you a double-double, he can shoot 40% from three, and then play lockdown defense. So I love him for that type of role. And then right now, Whitmore, like, I don't see him being much more than a shooter right now or a scorer right now. Really good scorer. I think he's got a high potential of being a really good scorer, but what else? What else does he do? Like, you can find really good scorers in this league. They're kind of dime a dozen in the NBA. So I'll go Alpe, Jalen, Amen, Jabari, and Cam Whitmore. Brian, you have a 5?
I do, and it's pretty similar, but I would actually flip. And it's not because Jalen doesn't have more upside, or that he has less upside, I guess would be the proper way to phrase it. I'm just more confident in Amen hitting his upside than I am in Jalen's. So I would actually go Alpe's number 1, obviously. That's the no-brainer. Then I would actually go Amen to Jalen 3, then Jabari and Cam 4 and 5.
Okay. Oh. I'm curious why you think Amen has a better chance at his upside than Jalen. Just because we've seen more of Jalen?
That's part of it. I mean, we've seen 3 years now of Jalen, and just, look, I'm not saying Amen doesn't have ups and downs or inconsistencies, but what I've seen from him, you mentioned it, the doing things at that position that not many guys in the league do. I think he could turn into not that he would average a triple-double, but a triple-double type player at that position. Yeah. Whereas Jalen, he could be, you know, an all-star, better level guard, or he could implode, not get it, fight with Ime, and be out of this team in 2 years.
Now, the thing is, I would say the upside for Amen is Russell Westbrook.
Yeah,
kind of the things you mentioned.
I don't think he can be as good a scorer, though.
And because he's not as physical, like physically strong. Maybe he can get there. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to. But Russ had that unbelievably strong athletic frame where he could jump. He could also take contact, and he could finish around the basket, and he could punish you. But that's why when I look at these guys, too, now I'm starting to nitpick the shortcomings and go, well, is it more difficult for a man to develop that shot, specifically the three, or Cam Whitmore to play consistent defense? Mm-hmm. Because Cam Whitmore is starting to get it on the defensive end a little bit more. He's understanding what Udoka demands of him to be on the floor.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the answer is more the defense. I think the defense would be easier than the shooting. But I think Amen can be a valuable player without being a good shooter.
Yeah, I mean, Russell Westbrook never became a dead-eye shooter. I mean, he's obviously improved
over. He's a good mid-range shooter.
Sure, but he never became a dead-eye shooter.
No, he didn't. But he had years where he shot over 30% from three,
mm-hmm.
which right now seems like a long shot for Amen Thompson to do. And then to Blanker's point, like, Russ was unbelievable around the rim. And look, Amen's still young. He can develop this. But Russ was a really good scorer. Like, not a good shooter, but a really good scorer. Amen's not a good scorer yet. And again, he's still a rookie, very, very young, and maybe he can get there. But Russ was an electric scorer. Min to me is more Ben Simmons than Russell Westbrook right now.
Oh, totally agree. Totally agree. Great comp. And I've said the same thing. Absolutely. But the thing is, if you want to hold out hope for him to develop that three and become a better overall spot-up shooter, you look at guys, and Brian, I think you and I talked about this late in the show the other day. Jason Kidd came into the league, 25-letter alphabet, no J in it. He developed a jump shot. He became and then he finished.
I actually like that one.
A six.
He finished in the what? I think he's like fourth all time in 3-point makes in league history. But look at Lonzo Ball and LaMelo Ball. Both those guys had funky, messed up looking jump shots and mechanics, and they started. There was a way to figure it out.
I don't see becoming a better shooter as an impossibility, because you mentioned a couple good names there with the Ball brothers, but also remember when Amari Stoudemire first came to the league, all he could do was dunk. He had no game outside of the paint, and he developed into a guy that could hit that 15-foot baseline jumper with pretty good consistency.
Because he worked with Dream.
I don't know if that would be available for Amen Thompson, but I certainly think he could develop the shot more than maybe we're giving credit for.
Well, the biggest thing for me when looking at Amen versus specifically the Ball brothers is the fact that his mechanics don't look broke. They don't look like completely out of whack with where his elbow is and how he all these other things, where specifically LaMelo's shot looked really funky. So I think that there's less to have to break down before you start to build up and develop the shot. I think it's just a matter of repetition and maybe a tweak here and there. And I think he can figure some things out.
Yeah, I don't think it's far off. I still think it's kind of ugly. Like, it's super slow, choppy, zero confidence. But you're right. It's not as far off as the Balls were.
Yeah.
6'9", 2'7". I'm hoping Jabari can turn into a Chris Middleton type player. I don't like that comp.
Middleton's
more of a perimeter player, and Jabari's got to be a post.
Correct.
Jabari's got to be, like, the one area where I want Jabari to improve, and he was doing pretty good for a couple of weeks, and he's kind of went down a little bit. I want him to be a tough son of a gun. Like, I want that guy to be a mother, get it every single rebound. Like, that's what I want Jabari to do. No, I'm not Paul. 2833, even though he's done for the year, what about Tari Eason?
I love Tari, but I'm not putting him in my list because he's not eligible, because he's out for the year. Like, Tari's in my future plan.
Would you have him above Jabari if he was eligible, though?
No.
See,
not right
thing.
Now.
Like, he's still probably sixth.
Yeah. I mean, that's because that's what he is. He's a sixth man. This roster, as currently constructed with the development of these young players, Tari's perfect role is to be the Swiss Army knife sixth man that can do a whole lot of things really well.
Yeah.
That's who he is. Now, if he comes back from this injury and he just develops faster and better than we thought, sure, there's a different role for him. But right now, that's my role for him. That's why he'd be sixth.
I like the foundation. Like, I really like the foundation. That's why I want him to keep them together for one more offseason. And then let's see where you're at the trade deadline.
I don't need a desperate – it would feel desperate to me to go out and try and overspend to get a superstar-level player and give up some of these guys right now.
Yeah, I think we're simpatico there. 713-780-3776. Which NFL quarterback situation is the most intriguing to you? And if you were a quarterback-needy team, would you rather have Justin Fields or Russell Wilson? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, this week I've been telling you about Vanderford Air Conditioning, because if you need plumbing work done, if you need HVAC work done, heating and air conditioning, there's only one place I'm going to tell you about. It's Vanderford Air, because of the fact that they have all the small business values, but they have the big business ability to take care of everything for you. They are absolutely the best combo platter, and that's why I'm telling you, right now, we're not really concerned about those 100-degree days, but they're coming, and evidently after this weekend, we're not going to see any cool weather in the 60s for quite a while. That means you know those 100-day days are right around the corner, and you better prepare now, because the last thing you want to do is have your AC unit go down when the temperatures go up. That's why I tell you about Vanderford Air, because they take care of it all for you, and the best part of all of it is they come to you, tell you what they can do, but it's all 100% money-back guarantee. They have the Vanderford Air exclusive test drive guarantee. It's a five-fold plan, and it all suits you to a T. No risk, customer trust, all because, one, it's the best value at the lowest cost to you, guaranteed. Comfort assurance guarantee, even the temperature, absolutely guaranteed. Quality workmanship guarantee, it will work and work well, whatever they do, a repair or a complete replacement. And a performance guarantee, operates at factory standards with 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. Don't believe me? Check out the website. It's VanderfordAir.com, or you can call them 281-557-COOL. Easy to remember, 281-557-COOL. Get to Vanderford Air before they have to come to you. And by the way, same-day appointments, always a thing.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. 6927, when Easton was playing, this team was so much better. He's got more upside than Whitmore and Jabari. I don't think it's the upside. I think he's just a better player right now.
I agree with that.
Like, he brings more to winning currently. I wouldn't say he's got a better upside, though.
He's more team polished right now. Like, he finds ways to fit in. He knows how to do the little things. He understands what's expected of a younger player with a veteran coach, no matter what the rest of the roster looks like. That's why I call him the Swiss Army knife. He knows how to he'll hit the offensive rebounds, the defensive rebounds. He'll dive on the floor. He'll finish at the rim. He doesn't worry if his number's not called. And he's not shooting it every time he touches it. But I think that the overall upside, because of just what you see out of Cam and Amen, is better. It's greater because they have that next that one tier that I don't think Tari has. Tari can be maybe a one-year all-star. Tari can be an above-average player in this league. I think Cam and Amen, you haven't figured it out yet in terms of how high they can go, but they have that star potential in some of the things I've seen.
713-780-ESPN. Which quarterback situation is the most intriguing in the NFL? And if you're if you need a quarterback, would you rather have Fields or Wilson? In Fuentes on the Twitch, Russell Wilson, 100%. Justin Fields might be the worst quarterback in the league. It should be a backup in Indy, according to somebody I know.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Russ or would you rather have Fields?
To me, I would rather have Justin Fields because you don't know what you don't know. And what you know about Russ is he's over the hill. He's not the quarterback he once was. You hear a lot of things about just, like, we talk about culture and we talk about, you know, how the Texans have turned it around. We've heard a lot of things about he rubs players the wrong way now. He obviously got into it with Peyton several times last year. But the main thing is I just don't know what he's got left in the tank and what he can do to make a team better. Justin Fields, yeah, you've seen some limitations, but it's been with a really bad organization that didn't have a whole lot in terms of, like, the right mentors, coaches, guidance around him in the system. But I'd be more curious about a Justin Fields than I would a Russell Wilson at this point in both guys' careers.
I'd rather go Russ. Like, Russ really wasn't bad last year. Russ was pretty good last year, actually. 26 touch. Yeah, he was pretty good last year.
Yeah.
You disagree?
Yeah.
Like, the Denver Broncos were terrible last year. They were 7-8, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions.
His touchdown to interception ratio is pretty good, but we've seen guys who was like Matt Castle 1 year had like a 24-2, and there was Carson Wentz a few years ago with the Colts was like 26-5.
Sure,
that
but we're comparing him to Justin
he's
Fields.
Playing well.
We're comparing him to Fields, though. Like, what does Fields do better? Like, obviously, he runs better.
He runs a lot better.
Yeah, but that's not what I need from a quarterback, though. Like, who is better at leading an offense? Who is better at throwing the football around? And Russell's not – I mean, he's older, sure, but he can still move around a little bit. I'd much rather have Russell Wilson than Justin Fields. If we're talking for about 1 year, if we're talking about one season, who gives you a better chance to win football games next year? I think it's clearly Russell Wilson.
For 1 year, yes. If you are – trying to find a quarterback for your franchise going forward.
I think you're screwed if you pick either one.
I don't, because I still think that there's a chance. I'm not saying it's a big chance, but I still think that there's a chance that in the right system, Fields can be more than he's been in Chicago.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that. But, like, the Steelers are flying in Russell Wilson. That was the big deal today, is that he was in an airport taking pictures, and he's visiting the Steelers. If I'm the Steelers, and, like, Steelers were on the cusp of the playoffs last year. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season in his career, so he wants to keep that, obviously. I'd much rather have Russell Wilson than Justin Fields. It's a no-doubter for me.
Yeah, and when you think about it, too, Mark Schlereth was a former Bronco that does radio in Denver, very close to the Broncos. he just annihilated Russ for everything that he did and how he was last year in Denver. And I don't think any team tried to do anything in a one-year span or in the next 3 years needs someone like that at this point in his career with what teams are trying to accomplish. I'd be a little leery of that. Not that it's the end-all, be-all, because you're right. His numbers were good last year. But I would be leery of those things kind of having the potential to be volatile and blow things up no matter how he plays.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good last year in terms of like that, you know, and maybe that
barely
was because
passed for 3,000 yards.
I'm talking about his like locker room presence. Like, we didn't hear anything about that last year. And maybe that was Peyton. Maybe that was Peyton like neutering him. Like,
yeah,
like
I mean, one of the first things Peyton did was take away his personal QB coach.
Yeah, like you're knocking Russell Wilson, but you're using information that doesn't help Justin Fields. Like,
no,
Russell,
look,
like
I
Justin
really
Fields was barely over 2,500. Like, you're knocking Russell Wilson for being under 3,000. Justin Fields barely got north of 2,500.
Sure, but okay, but I mean, if we're adding up all yardage, Justin Fields is far more capable of making up the deficit than Russell Wilson at this
okay,
age.
Okay, add the
Fields
yardage. 300 yards. It's 2,800 yards.
Fields
it's still less than what Russell Wilson threw for.
Rushing season.
And Russell threw for 3,500 yards. And ran
That's
for nearly 400.
3,500 isn't good.
But when you add the total yardage together, it's still higher than Justin Fields. I'm not comparing Russell Wilson to the rest of the NFL. I'm comparing Russell Wilson to Justin Fields, which is the question.
Sure.
Russell Wilson or Justin Fields?
And that's fine. And truth be told, I don't want either one of them. But I believe if I'm trying to hit a maximum upside, and especially if you're with a coach as experienced as Mike Tomlin, and the Steelers certainly have weapons around them with a couple good receivers and two talented running backs, I would rather give the shot on upside to Justin Fields because I don't think you're going to get anything more than the Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan-type journeyman quarterback performance for Russell Wilson. So at least with Fields, there's a chance to go beyond that, whereas Russell Wilson's capped at this point.
See, I think weapons matter for both guys. I think
well,
that
sure, and the Steelers have them.
Well, but, you know, if he goes to either guy goes to Atlanta,
well, yeah, Atlanta has
I think
weapons.
They have them too.
And they have better weapons. Yeah.
And then there's a chance that both guys become more than we're expecting them to be, whether you think Russ has got something left or Fields can actually find a level to where he can be an above-average quarterback in the NFL. I think the weapons and the offensive line obviously matters, and Russ can't run anymore, and obviously Fields, that's what he does best. So that's why I would lean Fields, because of his skill set. If he has some weapons around him, can be developed more. We've already seen the best of Russ.
I said the Steelers didn't make the playoff. They did. They were a seventh seed in the West. They made that last wild card.
That's right.
If I'm a weapon and I'm like I'm a really good receiver, if you signed Justin Fields to be my quarterback, I would be ticked off. I would be mad. I would be like, well, my career's ruined. I'm not going to be any good anymore.
But you know that you say that, but there were DJ Moore had some big games last year, and late in the year, he was slinging it around pretty good when he had some decent guys around him. He Cole Kmet had some good games at tight end, and he showed signs. That's what's so scary. It's like you see that. It's kind of like Jalen Green, only on a different level. Jalen Green, we know, still has the potential to be a superstar. Fields, we don't know what he has the potential to be, but when he has a couple games like that in a row, you're like, maybe it was coaching and system as much as anything else.
I mean, he's barely above a 60% career completion percentage. Like, I like accuracy for my quarterbacks. That's one of the things I look for the most, and he's not accurate throwing the football. Don't let what was the quarterback school guy, JT O'Sullivan? He can't stand Justin Fields. He cannot stand
JT O'Sullivan was like a journeyman quarterback in the league, right?
Yeah, did he play at Ohio State, I think?
Did he?
I had no idea his background.
I know, because we've played audio from him in the past where he's praising C.J. Stroud, so I'm familiar.
He loves Stroud.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah, he loves Stroud. He can't stand Justin Fields. Like, the way he sees everything pre-snap, post-snap, can't stand him as a quarterback. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We've talked a lot about certain positions the Texans need to improve, get better, et cetera, et cetera. Certain positions that they must have this offseason. There is a new position that the Texans can't afford to miss out on in free agency. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.